Welcome to the Confident ROI. Today, we got a great guest. We have the visionary at EOS Worldwide. He has replaced the original visionary of EOS, which is always a challenge to replace a visionary within a company. But Mike Payton is our guest, and we have a great conversation, wide-ranging, and we talk about how to use EOS in different ways, including if you're doing an acquisition of a company, and how we can analyze the people and not wait for it after the fact of completing an acquisition to do it. How you can really learn about the people and the core values of a company beforehand. We had a wide-ranging discussion. Especially what was interesting was on EOS, how they don't have a organizational chart, but an accountability chart. Who's really responsible for certain functions and making sure they happen. So it's a nice discussion. We enjoyed it. Really, if you're interested in EOS and you've never heard of it, you'll definitely know more about EOS. So sit back and enjoy this podcast with Mike Payton from EOS. Mike Payton, welcome to the Confident ROI.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
Well, looking forward to talking with you. I've had a lot of experience with EOS, with companies I've been involved with, and I've been looking at an acquisition, been working on one of a company, and one of my thoughts was bringing in EOS at the start. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that and how to, is EOS a system, because a lot of times people bring in EOS when things are in whitewater. It's a challenging environment to lead the business. It's no longer fun anymore. But they know the people, they know the company. But what's your experience? Has anyone brought in EOS as part of coming in new with a company?
Yeah, boy, there's so many ways we could go with this one. And so I'm going to keep it high level at first, and then let's just dive down into the deeper stuff as you see fit. So first of all, there is an EOS tool in the toolbox called Merger and Acquisition Fit. And it's in the toolbox because what we've observed is that the things that make integrating an acquisition or a merger difficult are not the things most people analyzing the deal on the front end spend a lot of time and energy on. And what Merger and Acquisition Fit is for is kind of like marriage counseling for a potential transaction, where we want to get the scary stuff out there and start working together as two teams on how that scary stuff is going to play out. So it's really about assessing cultural fit and strategic fit before you agree to consummate the relationship. So that if something's going to break culturally or strategically, that issue is on the table, crystal clear, and maybe with an action plan before the deal gets done, rather than rearing its ugly head after the deal gets done. So that's the first answer I'd give to you, is it absolutely is critical to do that kind of work pre-acquiring a business or merging, because most people just don't spend enough time on that. It is like a marriage analogy where, you know, you're focused on all the positive attributes and you're trying to keep your weaknesses and flaws from one another. And at some point, you got to get that stuff out there, you know?
Yeah, I remember going to, before getting married, meeting with the priest, and he was asking these questions. And there were a lot of things that I probably should have addressed before getting married. It would have made my wife's life a lot easier over the last 20 years. But yeah, you know, a lot of times, hey, we're going to get married, you know,
right.
we're doing this, right? And so what kind of questions are there and what kind of issues you try to get out on the table in that?
Yeah. And you know, we start the session with a check-in. You know, there's usually one to three people from each side in the room. And, you know, we ask the people to check in with, why are all the reasons you're excited about this? And then what are you afraid of or worried about? How could this go wrong? And so that starts populating an issues list. And then the specific questions we're asking and the teaching we do is around core values and people and what kind of operating system you're using. The EOS way of operating a company requires certain characteristics and attributes of the owners or leaders of the organization. Decisiveness needs to be valued rather than avoided. Single point accountability is really critical. Open and honest two-way conversation between every human in the business, particularly supervisor to direct report and vice versa. You know, these are things that are really unique and unusual about an EOS company relative to the typical organization out there. And so it's that kind of very direct, you know, here's the way we run our business. Are you guys going to be okay with that? Here are our core values. And if you have somebody who's a rock star from a performance standpoint and doesn't share our core values, that person's probably not going to last in our organization. Are you okay with that? You know, it's that kind of very direct mindset that we use.
But people have to be open to, a lot of times they're going to do the deal, or we have to do the deal. It's that, how do you know you're actually getting through to them?
Well, you know, one of three things happens, right? So step one, you're so crystal clear and direct that they run screaming from the room before the session is over. And that, you know, something close to that has happened when I've done one of these sessions before. Number two, you simply confirm what people already know, which is there's a pretty good cultural fit here. And yeah, we've got a couple issues on the list, but you know, we didn't uncover anything today that makes us nervous. And then the third is something in between. And what I found is, as long as people are willing to show their cards, a great group of humans working together towards a common good can resolve those kinds of issues. It's where people aren't willing to show their cards that it gets tough. You know, and I, you know, for a living, I'm surrounded by entrepreneurial leadership teams, and I'm watching them interact with one another, and I'm reasonably good at figuring out what people really mean when they say something. But you know, I'm fallible too, and so you know, you just really have to work hard to get to know one another and ask the tough questions and make sure you get the answers you need, and then, you know, post-transaction, assuming you do decide to combine forces, having talked about the way things are going to work before the transaction closed, in my opinion, gives you some ability to enforce your core values or other standards, other rules of the game afterwards, because you can say, hey, you know, we kind of covered this. I'm surprised you're struggling with it a little bit.
You mentioned showing your cards.
Yeah.
And can you give an example of what that is? Or you know, maybe somebody appeared to be at the table, but not really engaged.
Well, so let's just take the most obvious question between two organizations that are contemplating a merger. This organization has somebody in charge. Organization A has somebody in charge of it. And organization B has somebody in charge of that. I can't tell you how many times the conversation is happening for the first time in this session. Who's going to be running this thing? And it's not unusual for the person in charge of organization A to think it's him and the person in charge of organization B to think it's her. And so that conversation needs to happen at some point. And so that's the example I would give you is, you know, it's just totally human to be thinking, well, am I going to be in charge or are you going to be in charge? And can you imagine getting married without having established that?
A lot of times that's challenging. A marriage is not really established until after the fact.
And except you and I are smart enough to know our spouses are in charge and we've never made any bones about anything other than that, right?
As my dad pointed out to me once, I was having trouble with a college girlfriend, and he's like, you know, there's times to put your foot down. But it's not, you know, and really dig in on a decision. But it's not nearly as often as you're having it. You know? It's the reason why your life's miserable at this point.
Yeah, so. I hear you.
He didn't give me my dad has not given me a lot of relationship advice, but that it was pretty good. It kind of stuck with me. I'm like, okay.
That's good. That's good.
So, okay. And you mentioned then enforcing core values. Can you give any stories of a company, you know, doing that? Enforce kind of almost feels like law enforcement, but how does it, because one of the things I like about EOS, it makes things clear, but right. In some ways people can kind of like nod and like, yeah, okay, that's it. And they can say them, but how does it really ingrain and not just words?
Well, so, you know, first of all, we go through a very specific discovery exercise with our clients to really get right to the root of what kind of people fit this company's culture. And a lot of organizations approach core values from a standpoint that maybe doesn't create that kind of clarity and specificity. Mm-hmm. And then another common challenge I see with organizations is they have a bunch of core values that describe the organization they want to be running and the way it shows up in the outside world, rather than the way we do it in an EOS company, which is to focus on the best attributes of the very best people in the company. We focus on humans. So core values for us are the characteristics and attributes the people around you need to consistently exhibit, so you feel like you're surrounded by people who fit the culture you want to be leading and running, right? And yes, if everybody around you exhibits these characteristics and attributes, then your company's going to feel this way to the outside world. But unless you go through this specific discovery exercise and really think about it from that point of view, oftentimes you get a bunch of core values that don't lend themselves to a guttural reaction from your people of, oh, I know what that means and looks and feels like and how I need to behave in order to pass muster from a cultural standpoint. So that's really important. The second thing we do, Alex, is we teach our clients how to incorporate the core values into a performance management and communication system so they're always crystal clear and used to assess people. Okay? So it's not enough to create core values and put them on the wall behind the reception desk or on your website or coffee mugs or the back of your business card. We ask our clients to live and breathe them every day, to repeat themselves often, to high-five people with core values. And when somebody doesn't exhibit a core value, to pull them into your office, close the door, and say, Alex, when you do X, Y, or Z, it makes me feel like you don't exhibit our core value of no drama or positive attitude. Or one of my favorite core values, one of my clients has a core value, no Eeyores. So, you know, we don't need you to be perky all the time, but if you're one of those people who can find a cloud to every silver lining, you don't fit around here, right? And so it's that using them every day that creates clarity and consistency. And then lastly, 10 years ago, when I was first starting on the EOS journey, one of my clients gave a speech about his company to a trade association he was a part of, and he asked my permission to talk about EOS as part of that speech. And I said, fine. And he invited me to come watch. And he gave this speech, and it was really good. And one of the people in the audience said, you know, you mentioned, Tom, you mentioned core values. I've got core values in my organization, and every time I share them with everybody in the company, they just kind of roll their eyes. When does the eye rolling stop? And Tom looked him straight in the eye and he said, the first time you fire somebody who's a reasonably good performer, but they don't share your core values. And the guy went, I got it. And that made the point as well as I could explaining it. You got to mean it. If you have a top performer who's not held accountable for following the rules of your core values, you can't enforce them anywhere because they've got to matter to everybody, even people who are good at their job. So hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the tools when you were talking about it and of people matching up with the core values, the people analyzer that EOS has in a due diligence for an acquisition of the key members of the team, yeah. You know, we do so much due diligence on the financials and on the documents and all that, but okay, let's go through the people, because that's really what you're buying most.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's one of the exercises we do in, you know, there's some core values mapping. If both organizations have separate core values, we try and figure out if there's any mapping or overlap there. You know, we do people analyze one another, explain how that works.
Could you explain the people analyzer? So yeah, people aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, the people analyzer is just a very simple grid. Across the top of the people analyzer are a company's 3 to 7 core values, which measure culture fit. And the letters GWC, which stand for gets it, wants it, and capacity to do it, which are the 3 attributes of somebody who's consistently, reliably, and independently great at his or her job. And we teach our clients a very simple rating system for the core values in GWC that helps you assess whether somebody's a right person. A right person fits your culture, and in the right seat, someone in the right seat's good at their job. And so we teach them this rating system, and then we ask them to sit down with their direct reports every quarter to have a two-way conversation about what the manager, leader, or supervisor thinks of his or her direct report, and what that person thinks of themselves, so they can resolve any gapping and put an action plan in place to get people what we call above the bar. That's the way the people analyzer works. And, you know, it's a simple, practical tool that facilitates a conversation that can be clear and simple, and it reduces the amount of awkwardness. Like, you know, when I was leading and managing companies before I became an EOS implementer, the worst conversation to have with an employee was, "Hey, Bill, you're really good at your job, but there's something about you that just drives me nuts, and I can't quite put my finger on it." This eliminates the need to have that kind of incendiary, frustrating, scary conversation, because you can really itemize where the gaps are and work together to solve those gaps, rather than waiting until you just get frustrated and agreeing to part ways.
Well, one of the things I like about the EOS process is the EOS system, from what I've seen, is you bring that out early in the process when you're implementing with the leadership team and going around the room and each person giving a grade to the other person sitting there.
Yep.
Is it plus or minus or plus minus, and why? And that gets some things out on the table there that it can produce some awkward moments, but you know, that if you don't have that awkward moment, you keep living with the dysfunction of someone who's just going in a different direction or behaving in a different direction.
That's right. And you know, the first couple of times I did sessions with my clients and facilitated this exercise, we do that for the first time on the morning of the first full day we spend with our leadership team. And, you know, I've known them for all of 4 hours when we get to this point in the agenda. And we ask every member of the leadership team to subject themselves to a real-time performance review. Here's the seat on the accountability chart we need somebody to excel at. Do you think Alex is going to be great at this job? And we ask them to be open and honest. And the first couple of times I did that, I was terrified, just shaking in my boots. And man, I'm sure the world is going to blow up. And you can just feel all the anxiety in the room. People kind of sit up straight in their chairs and brace for the worst. And I want to say I've done 110 of those first session days with different companies over the years. And 109 of them were less dramatic than I expected. One was an autonomous division within a really large organization that had a very mature HR system built around never telling anyone the truth, in my humble opinion. And one of the members of the leadership team took umbrage when I asked them to do this. And he said, "Well, you can't expect me that that we're going to sit here and tell our fellow leaders what we think of one another out loud in a public space. And I said, at this time, it was my 42nd client. And I said, well, I'm 41 for 41. I guess there's a first time for everything. And they got through it, and it was a relief. I mean, everybody already knows, Alex. That's the thing. What I think, you know, I hope your listeners get out of this is nobody wants to come to work every day thinking they're great at their job, but being surrounded by a boss or fellow leadership team members who don't think they're very good at their job. I would love to be great at my job every day, but if I'm not, I beg you to be open and honest with me and let me know that I'm not, because then I've got a chance to fix it. But if I found out 2 years from now that for 2 years you've thought I was lousy at my job, and now you're just telling me when you sit down, hand me a cardboard box and say bye-bye, you know, you really haven't served me well as a leader. And so that's kind of the mindset we're trying to.
And inevitably it comes out in nonverbal communication, or I mean, it's going to come out. It's not like, yeah. And that contempt is, it doesn't help anybody, but you know, so often people kind of want to deny, they don't want to open that door because they might assume like it's going to take too long to deal with it or it's too messy. But it seems just really to compound on itself, the problem.
Well, and again, you can't fix it if it's not out on the table, right? A great leadership team or a great leader-manager duo can solve anything working together. And we always tell people, attack the issue, not the person. So it's okay to say, hey, Alex, you know, this part of your job, I don't think you're very good at, and I don't think you like it. And the reason I think that is you told me so last week, right? You were sitting in my office complaining.
That was in confidence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You were sitting in my office complaining about how you hate to manage people. And the first role in your seat on the accountability chart is lead, manage, and drive accountability. So I owe it to you to be honest and repeat what you told me last week. You don't like that and you don't want this seat. You know, that's what we're trying to do is just unlock all that secret behind closed doors stuff and create honesty. Now, what's not okay is for me to call you names or assume negative intent or any of that stuff. And as long as you can focus on the issue and work together to solve it, we're going to get there together. And that's kind of what we teach.
You mentioned there roles and responsibilities. So I like how EOS has sort of a standard organizational chart. And can you walk us through that?
Yeah, and I would start by saying we're sort of maniacal about calling it an accountability chart rather than an organizational chart because it is very expressly to crystallize for everybody in the organization who's accountable for what. Not who's involved with what, not what level of hierarchy they have in the organization, but when something important needs to happen and I need the person who's going to be able to make the decision on this subject, the accountability chart is designed to create clarity for everybody about what that is. And so when we're working with our clients, we start at the leadership team level and we ask the team to fire everybody in the company, forget about the past, forget about their egos, pretend they just bought this organization from the person who owned it yesterday. And they're here as a board of directors trying to figure out if they could hire the Tom Brady or Serena Williams or, you know, whomever of each function in the business. What is the right structure for this organization? And we start by talking about the major functions of the business like marketing and sales, operations, and finance. And then we customize the leadership team to the unique nature of that business, organization, or industry. And they end up with somewhere between 3 to 5 major functions. And then there's another major function called the integrator, the person who runs the day-to-day business, the glue, the person who creates accountability, harmoniously integrates everybody. And then there's often another major function called visionary. And once we're clear on all the seats, then we put five roles in each seat to define what everybody's accountable for. And those roles are clear and simple things like sales. It isn't leveraging the paradigms we create in the marketplace to generate increased revenue. That's not simple and clear. It's sales. If you're accountable for sales, put sales in the seat. And so that's what we're trying to do with this thing, is just create crystal clarity about who's accountable for what. And the rule here is structure first, people second. So don't build the seat around the strengths and weaknesses of the people you've already got. Build the seat assuming you're going to have somebody who's great at all of that walk in the door tomorrow and say, I'm ready to work at a reasonable rate for your organization, and I'm going to be passionate and effective. That's the right structure for your organization. Then we'll put the people you've got in seats. And usually that exposes some gaps at the leadership level of, we need to be good at some things that we aren't currently very good at.
Right. Okay. And so how do you handle that when there's the seats aren't filled naturally and you got some extra people?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of different kinds of issues. So it's not unusual at all for one person on the leadership team to walk out of that first session with two seats. And so a classic example is the visionary founder is in the visionary seat and also in charge of sales and marketing. Okay. What we hope doesn't happen is the visionary ends up in every single seat, although occasionally that's kind of the way the organization's running when we start. So that's one thing, is somebody's in multiple seats. And that's not a big deal, very common in entrepreneurial company. But what we've crystallized is that over time, we've got to figure out how we're going to solve that issue, because it's hard to ride multiple horses with one rear end, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The second issue is the one you kind of described, which is there are eight people in the leadership team meeting, and we end up with five seats on the accountability chart. Three people really don't belong in a seat on the accountability chart. We just call it out. And what we say to, and sometimes the person who doesn't end up with the seat owns 100% of the company. That's kind of awkward. But what we're saying to everybody in the room, Alex, is we're just saying, listen, this is what our business needs to achieve its vision. We want you to spend all your time doing work you love to do and are great at, working in your genetic, God-given, you know, genius area, for lack of a better term. And if these seats aren't it, hopefully we end up with a company-wide structure where there's a seat you'd be great at, and you're going to love coming to work every day, hitting it out of the park, and contributing value to the business, and you're never going to be asked to do work you don't love and aren't very good at again. And over time, while that can sting and egos get affected, over time, you know, most of my clients are thrilled to death to no longer have two buckets of stuff to describe their job. Stuff I love doing, it brings me energy, and I could do it well in my sleep. And this other pile of manure that I don't have a bag for that I wish I never had to do again. We get rid of that stuff.
And so, how does EOS help a company, help individuals within the company identify the work they're great at?
Well, we recommend a lot of assessment and profiling tools for people who don't know. But quite frankly, it's rare, Alex, that I encounter a team of people who, when given the space to openly and honestly reflect that, can't come up with the right answer. Now, we use a tool called the Delegate and Elevate tool to help leaders compartmentalize all the stuff they're accountable for. And this is a practical tool for this exercise, but basically, we ask them to do an activity study in a typical week. What are the kinds of things you're accountable for doing every week? And roughly how much time are you required to spend on those activities? And then we ask them to fit all the items on that list into one of four compartments or categories. The first category is the stuff you love to do and are great at. The second category is the stuff you like to do and are good at. And in both of those categories, keep doing that for the rest of your life. You're going to have fun. You're going to be reasonably happy. Some weeks you're going to feel overwhelmed. That's just natural in an entrepreneurial company. But that, there's nothing wrong with those two categories. Everything in the bottom two categories is a candidate for you to delegate to someone else for whom these things might be love to do great at or like to do good at in your organization. And so those categories are stuff you don't like to do, but you've gotten really good at. That is where most people in jobs go to die. Because in an entrepreneurial company, you have to do a lot of work you don't love doing in order for the organization to achieve its vision. It's resource constrained. You got to be flexible and nimble. There are many days in an entrepreneurial company where you're looking around for somebody else to sweep the shop floor or build a spreadsheet, and there's just nobody there. And so if you need the spreadsheet or a clean shop, you just go do it. And what happens to entrepreneurial leaders is they end up being good at a bunch of stuff they wish they never had to do again. And they're afraid to say it out loud. And so we give them this tool to help them say it out loud. And then the last quadrant is actually really easy to delegate. That's stuff you don't like to do and you're lousy at. Most of my clients don't struggle with that. It's that other quadrant they struggle with. And so that's how we help them with this process.
All right. That makes sense. So it's just helping them kind of take inventory of what they're doing. Make sure they're not doing too much of what is maybe just easy to do, but they, what else, what do they need? What really they have to do? No one else can do for them.
That's right. And I'll give you a personal story. So when I started my implementer practice a little more than 11 years ago, obviously I was in every seat, self-employed entrepreneur. And the thing I was lousy at and didn't like was bookkeeping and accounting. And so I would put all my invoices and all my expense receipts and all my travel vouchers and all that stuff in a manila folder. And then I had to go buy one of those brown things that expands and you can stick a bunch of manila folders in it, because I literally was carrying around about a year's worth of accounting work, right? And if my CPA is listening to this, I'm in real trouble here, just so we know. And I would take this stupid thing with me on vacation thinking, you know, when I'm with my family, if I could just spend 3 or 4 hours, you know. And so you get into these weird psychological traps where you just feel like you can't afford to hire somebody to help you with that, or it's going to take you longer to train somebody to do it than it is to just do it yourself. And I was stuck in that trap. And when I finally broke down and hired an assistant/bookkeeper, you know, she ripped that thing out of my hands and said, give me 3 weeks, it'll all be fixed. And, you know, I was paying her 1/5 of my session rate per hour to do work she loved, was really good at, and I never got to because I was procrastinating. You know, it's just such a simple fix. And you know, that's what we're trying to do here, is help people take the simple steps forward that unlock freedom, time, energy, and passion.
You mentioned that you started out 11 years ago. You're one of the first EOS implementers, probably the longest running EOS implementer. Is that a safe assumption?
Well, behind Gino Wickman and his founding business partner, Don Tinney, yes. And my colleague, Renee Bohr, out of Chicago, was in my boot camp class in November of 2007 together. So he and I are kind of the old dogs in the EOS implementer community.
So what's evolved? What have you guys learned over those years? How do you help people avoid pitfalls or be more successful?
Yeah. So, what I would say is EOS has remained reasonably inert. You know, EOS is a complete set of simple concepts and practical tools that help entrepreneurs get what they want from their businesses and help leadership teams clarify, simplify, and achieve a vision. And Geno really built it to be timeless. And so that is proven to be true. We've evolved the sophistication of some things we do and the delivery mechanisms we use to reach implementers and end user clients, but the system and the process and the toolbox and the EOS model have remained relatively unchanged. I think what we've all realized is that the professional EOS implementers in the world, there are now more than 260 people. Just before I got on this call, I learned that next week when we're all together as a community, there'll be over 250 people in the room. And of course, at that first QCE, there were four of us that Renee and I went to. And for many years, it was, you know, in the dozen range. And we were doing it right in Geno's little session room in Livonia, Michigan. And so now to have a, you know, hotel meeting space packed to the gills with 250 people is just really cool. And what's happened is we've started migrating worldwide. So we're now in 22 countries with implementers and implementing in another couple of dozen countries with people who are traveling. And so this is becoming a worldwide phenomenon. And it's a testament to the simple, practical nature of these tools and the fact that no business wizardry or acumen is required to apply these tools in a business. And it's practical and accessible and built for entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs have been hungry for a way of operating a business that isn't trying to turn you into a corporation with bureaucracy and red tape. And I think EOS fills that bill beautifully.
Yeah. And you've taken on a role within EOS, the beyond your implementer role. What role is that?
Well, I'm the visionary for EOS worldwide. And that was the seat that Geno owned. When he and Don Tinney started the business, Geno sat in the visionary seat and Don was the integrator. And about 7-8 years ago, Geno tapped me on the shoulder and said my succession plan was in place before Don and I started this business. And my plan was to exit the visionary seat by the time I turned 50. And we'd like to talk to you about whether or not that would be a good fit for you. And we spent a year discerning whether that was a good move, another year preparing for the transition, and then a third year of Geno helping me with me in the seat, making sure I was doing a great job and equipped with all the tools I need to do it. And so that was about 5 years ago. And I've been having a ball ever since.
That's a big deal. I mean, it's one thing a lot of founders never give up the integrator role well, even if they don't like it. But the visionary role is a lot of times something they want to keep. And it's very hard to be the visionary to replace that, because that's what they originally had was the vision. Right. I mean, that's a big ask.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a terrific honor. Secondly, it's Geno knowing himself really well and knowing that when this business got to a certain point, his passion wasn't going to be leading that organization. You know, Gino's passionate about being a professional EOS implementer, and he continues to do that. He comes to every QCE. In fact, EOS Worldwide's 2-day annual planning session will be conducted this weekend, and he'll be our implementer. So that's a great honor to have Geno as our guide on this journey. And he's also passionate about his next entrepreneurial project, which is something he's calling Entrepreneur U. And it is a discernment an education program helping young people figure out whether or not they're truly entrepreneurial, and if so, illuminating a path for them that might not be the traditional, you know, public education, college, you know, graduate with an MBA kind of course, but a true entrepreneurial development program is what he's been working on. And so, you know, it's a great honor to have freed him up to pursue his entrepreneurial passion and at the same time, ensure the organization he and Don founded is left in good hands.
Well, that's That's sounds like it's been a win-win for both of you.
Yeah, we're having fun, and it's been a crazy ride. I mean, I have been working hard managing both my implementer practice and this rapidly growing entrepreneurial company for some time now, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's terrific. Well, we've covered a lot of topics today. Anything else you'd like to share with the audience before you tell them how they can get in contact with you or EOS?
Yeah, no, I would say to the entrepreneurs out there, please, if you're not getting everything you want from your business today, I want you to get back in touch with what it is you want and write it down. It's generally something you'd feel passionate about and love saying you achieved. And if you're not connecting to that every day in the way your business is running now, consider looking at EOS as a way to help you reconnect with your passion, surround yourself with people who want to help you get there, and get what you want from your business, because life is too short to feel like it's your lot in life to be disappointed every day.
Terrific. And how best should they get a hold of you or EOS?
Yeah, very simply, EOSworldwide.com was built to be a community full of valuable information, the ability to connect to me or any of our implementers the world over. And so just go there, read the books, use the videos, download the free tools, and reach out to me or one of my colleagues if we can help you get what you want from your business.
Terrific. Well, thanks for coming on. And it's been great talking with you, and best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Alex. I've enjoyed it a lot. Appreciate you having me on.
If you're liking Confident ROI, or even if you don't, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks.